January 1973, the Supreme Court ruled on Roe v. Wade and legalized abortion on demand. This controversy provoked the pro-life struggle. Can the tide be turned? Stay tuned.
It's often been said that if wombs had windows, there would be no abortion.
This is Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal. I'm Jim Long of the Institute for Creation Research. In 1973, after several years of appeals and proceedings, Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton reached the Supreme Court. The court's rulings overturned local and state laws and legalized abortion on demand during all 9 months of pregnancy. Stay tuned as we examine the legal aspects of this decision, the personal and societal repercussions, and the hope we can have in these dark times. But first, let's take a look at the case that became the focus of the abortion rights activist. Attorney Richard Colson with the National Right to Life Committee explains.
Up until the time of Roe versus Wade, abortion was basically illegal in every state of the United States and had been since the founding of the nation, either under common law or statutory law. And overnight, the Supreme Court took it out of the control of the states and declared that what had been a crime was now a fundamental right that the states could not impair in any way. Doe versus Bolton was a companion case to Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court considered them together, heard arguments together, and decided them together. And the significance of the two cases together is that we have abortion on demand for any reason for all 9 months of pregnancy. It is a common misperception that Roe only allowed abortion in the first 3 months and only in the difficult cases. Roe did say that you could bar abortion after viability, but you had to allow it in cases of saving the life of the mother and in cases of preserving the mother's health. And Doe versus Bolton defined health as anything that affects the mother's well-being, including things like financial reasons, career plans, anything that would affect her well-being.
When the court handed down its decisions, they had no idea concerning the number of abortions that would follow.
It quickly turned into a flood of approximately 1.5 million every year. And, of course, the United States has been widely influential around the world where there are roughly 50 million a year occurring worldwide.
Today, abortion on demand is justified constitutionally by the 14th Amendment and its right to privacy. Dr. Francis Beckwith, author of the book Politically Correct Death, states,
In the most recent case that the court dealt with this constitutionally in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the court shifted its focus away from the right to privacy to a right to personal autonomy. And in that decision, the court said that the 14th Amendment of the Constitution was there so that people could define their own meaning of life and existence.
Attorney Richard Colson explains.
If you look through the Constitution, of course, you'll find no right to privacy. The Supreme Court found that right in the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was passed after the Civil War, and it guarantees that a state may not deprive somebody of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, of course, what that originally meant was you couldn't hang somebody or put them in jail or fine them without giving them a fair trial. They kind of built on that as something they called a family right in the contraceptive cases and put all that together into something they called a right to privacy, to declare a right to abortion based on that.
There are many who claim that they advocate abortion on demand out of compassion for the mother, but there appears to be other reasons behind this liberality.
I believe my own abortion experience is what led me into the abortion industry. Each time I sold another woman an abortion, she was okay, and just perhaps I was okay. And then it became something else. It was about money.
Carol Everett, former abortion clinic operator and current pro-life activist.
24 years after Roe v. Wade, we know very little about abortion's consequences, but we do know this. One out of four women who experience abortion have problems with future pregnancies, including sterility. 94% of women who experience abortion have emotional trauma that we identify as post-abortion syndrome. And we now have studies that show very clearly if a woman has an abortion in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, she has a 30% or greater risk of breast cancer.
Society and abortion rights groups tend to overlook the consequences of abortion for the woman. But there are those that do truly believe that they are best serving the needs of women. However, they all disregard the right to life of the unborn child.
They had to deal with that in Roe versus Wade.
Attorney Richard Colson.
They said, well, of course, if a woman has a right to liberty, surely that unborn child, we should at least consider whether it has a right to life. And what they did is they noted that the 14th Amendment guaranteed the right to life only to persons. So they went leafing through the Constitution and found that everywhere the word person was used, it referred to grown-up people, born people. Well, obviously that's true because the Constitution was talking about who can run for president and who can be a senator and who can be a congressman. So everybody in there was born. It was kind of a ludicrous argument. I would have been embarrassed to make it, but that's what they did. And therefore, they decided that for 14th Amendment purposes, an unborn child was not a person. Of course, you know the other time when we decided there were human beings who were not persons, that was the Dred Scott case when we decided, or the Supreme Court decided, that even though black persons were human beings, they were not persons, because a person is someone who has legal protection. And we look back on that, of course, as one of the black moments of our history and regret that decision very much, as I think we shall someday, Lord willing, with abortion.
Is the unborn child a human being? If society was forced to admit that the unborn are fully human at conception, then all the other superficial arguments would have to be set aside. Dr. Beckwith.
I think that the pro-life position or the pro-life movement has got to emphasize the fact that the fetus is a human person. Everything else is simply beside the point. And what's odd is that even though the pro-life movement has emphasized the person of the fetus, I don't think we've done a good job of showing that that particular point, if correct, trumps every other consideration.
Since 1973, abortion has destroyed man's compassion and has devalued the personhood of the unborn child. But this has reached far beyond the womb.
I believe that abortion destroys that baby created in the image of God. I believe abortion ultimately destroys the way we look at life. Recently, we saw a young couple check into a hotel, force the delivery of their baby, beat the baby to death, wrap it in plastic, and put it in a trash can. What does that do to something created in the image of God? And now we're seeing Kevorkian. We can't even keep up with how many people he is killing. I believe abortion has destroyed the way that America looks at life.
Richard Colson adds,
the prediction was by many pro-life scholars that once you allow the principle that it's okay to take a human life for a convenience reason, that that will certainly lead to infanticide, assisted suicide, and euthanasia. We had infanticide. It is still ongoing. You don't hear much about it because it's rather routine. And basically, the courts have said in such situations, parents get to choose the treatment option, and non-treatment is one of the treatment options.
This lack of respect for life isn't content with abortion and infanticide.
If you look at the latest decisions by the Ninth Circuit and the Second Circuit on assisted suicide, in which they found a right to assisted suicide, they lean very heavily on the Pennsylvania Casey decision, in which the Supreme Court reaffirmed a right to abortion. In other words, in order to defend abortion and reaffirm Roe versus Wade, the court had to explain in very flowery and loose language what the right to privacy meant. That was quickly latched on by people who advocated assisted suicide, and that was the sort of language that the Ninth Circuit relied upon in finding a right to assisted suicide. So the right to assisted suicide in constitutional law grows directly out of Roe versus Wade and Casey.
There have been many surveys taken, and surprisingly, many of those polled indicate they don't agree with abortion on demand. If these polls are accurate, what has allowed abortion to continue? Attorney Richard Colson.
Once you start constitutionalizing things, they're pretty well set in the stone because constitutional amendments are almost impossible, and courts don't often reverse themselves, and they haven't chosen to do so. Another part of the problem for those of us who are Christians and see things from a Christian perspective, obviously this nation's in need of a revival. It's overdue, and that's some kind of transformation internally that needs to take place.
If Roe v. Wade has constitutionalized abortion, what hope do we have?
It's often been said that if wombs had windows, there would be no abortion. We now have ultrasounds, which makes it easier for people to see what's going on in the womb. So there are some things that are helping us to let people know, at least visually, that yes, this is a a human being, and we should treat it as such. I think in a larger sense, though, our society has always tried to be more inclusive in the people that it draws into its realm of protection. And I have great hope that at one point people will recognize the grave wrong in attempting to bring women in more fully by excluding unborn children. There was some thought early on that this would be quickly overturned, but I think it's one of those lifetime things. But I do have great hope.
Carol Everett.
The hope is that God's people will stand up. You know, when the partial birth abortion veto was not overridden, I was devastated. And as I cried out to God, what I heard was, look how many times I forgave the Israelites when they repented. And it's not the world. Start looking to my people who are called by my name. We are his people. We are the answer. Do we see ourselves as standing for truth in our own sphere of influence?
And how do we get involved? According to Carol,
I would encourage the listeners to call the local Right to Life organization simply to get information to educate themselves. If they're interested in activism, the Right to Life groups are the way to go. If they're interested in ministry, call their local Crisis Pregnancy Center, listed under Abortion Alternatives. I believe that the Crisis Pregnancy Centers are the mission field of the 90s, reaching out to that young woman in that crisis pregnancy, saying, yes, you can. We will help you with your physical, emotional, spiritual needs. We will be here for you before the baby's born and even after.
Joining us now in studio is Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, we've heard about the consequences of abortion, but abortion itself is an evil result of wrong thinking, isn't it?
Jim, ideas have consequences. Wrong thinking will always beget wrong behavior, and abortion is one of those tragic fruits of wrong thinking, evolutionary thinking. Evolution is at the core of abortion. Evolution gives abortion scientific credibility, and it's thus used to justify sinful behavior. The scientific literature is full these days of what's called sociobiology, reasoning from an evolutionary perspective that man has come from the animals. See, scientists will study an animal population, a group of gorillas or a pride of lions. Then they'll observe animal behavior and suggest that human behavior should match it. Thus, it's used to justify promiscuity because, well, few animals mate for life. Some animals even practice a form of abortion. Thus, it's okay for us. One very common subject these days is infanticide, the killing of babies. Oh, animals do it. You see, Jim, it just doesn't stop. But humans aren't animals. We're created in the image of God. Any other perspective leads to great heartache. How desperately our society needs to come back to this back-to-Genesis perspective.
Thank you, Dr. Morris. As our program ends, we'd like to help you make a stand for the truth. At ICR, we understand that many of society's ills are rooted in evolution. And so we'd like to offer you a free information pack about the creation-evolution controversy. Included will be an audio cassette of this and next week's program, which will look at the scientific aspects of abortion. Please mention the Sanctity of Life audio tape. To ask for today's free offer, please call toll-free 1-800-7-GENESIS. That's 1-800, the number 7, and the word Genesis, 1-800-7-GENESIS, or 1-800-743-6374. And you can address your letters to ICR at P.O. Box 2667, El Cajon, California, 92021. ICR's website address is www.icr.org. Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a creation radio journal, is a production of ICR. For the Institute for Creation Research, I'm Jim Long. Thanks for tuning in.